It's everyone's favorite tournament of the year. The golfers are in Augusta, Georgia to compete for the coveted jacket. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you, yes, you, Taylor, in the center of the action by giving you a free shot to land in the green. This week, DraftKings is giving you a free shot at the $1 million top prize when you download and sign up using promo code THPN. If you haven't tried DraftKings, then this is the time.
It's easy to play. You pick six golfers, you stay under the salary cap, you submit your lineup before the tournament tees off early Thursday morning, and sit back and follow the action. The more red numbers they have on the scoreboard, the closer you'll be to winning some green. That's money. Money be green.
Wow.
As man once said. Rack up points for pars, birdie, finishing position, and more. So even though you might not be able to hit the course with the pros, you're probably not good enough or handsome enough, but we still believe in you. And DraftKings is going to give you the chance to scratch your competitive itch and reign supreme.
So you know what? Now you got that itch. How are you going to scratch it? Well, let me tell you. You're going to go and download the DraftKings app now and use the code THPN during signup. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at $1 million top prize. That's quite the top prize for $1 million. That's code. What's that?
It's a good amount of money.
You're damn right it is. And that is code THPN for those interested. And you can get a free shot at that $1 million top prize only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Straight Up Sabres, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics. As always, I'm Brendan.
And I'm Taylor.
And Taylor, the Sabres are looking pretty nice these days, coming off of a nice win against the Devils, where Rasmus Dahlin seemingly appears to be back from the dead. Casey Mittelstadt's looking good. Taylor Hall did not play due to the ongoing trade discussions that are going on with the trade deadline now just days away at this point. But Taylor, early reaction, how do you feel about how the team is playing right now at this point?
That game was really interesting because I think, I don't know if at any point this year, the Sabres won a game they didn't deserve to win. Like they've barely won any games as it is. So like, it's cool to see them like, okay, yeah, like their goalie got some saves. The opposite goaltender, Scott Wedgwood, did not get the saves and they won that way. My God, I think it's been since last January since that's happened.
Any kind of puck luck, yeah.
Yeah, seriously. So it's cool to see that. And yeah, on one hand, it's a little bit of luck going in their favor finally. On the other hand, it's a little bit of their goaltender continuing to play well. 8-5-3 now. Is he going to go above 500?
I got to think that it's not possible. I really, really, I mean, I
imagine.
It's a remarkable accomplishment that he has. What were you going to say?
He might play 40% of the team's games, go above 500, and have the team finish 31st. That would have to be the only time something like that's happened.
I can't think of another time.
It's really incredible. I know we already talked about the same thing last week, but I have a different take on it.
It's worth talking about again, but what's your take?
So I think Allmark getting hurt when he did was kind of a blessing in disguise. Because if he was around, like you can kind of see like the team Allmark came back to is actually worse than the team he left because Eichel's gone now is the main thing, but also Cousins is hurt now too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think McCabe got hurt right before Allmark. So that's kind of in Borgen, same thing. So you can see based on how they're playing right now that they would not have come close to anything like an 18 game losing streak with Allmark. Like a pretty important factor in that losing streak, along with the fact that they couldn't score, is they couldn't stop anything to like almost historic degree. It seemed like with the other three fellas that were in net. So, like, maybe Ralph Kruger wouldn't have gotten fired. Maybe they'd be, like, the 25th place team right now again, and we'd be like, oh, I don't know, weird pandemic season. They all got COVID, you know, a few weeks in. That probably screwed them some things up. They had a late start. Let's give Kruger finally a full season. And now it's clear that that would have been a disaster. They are playing significantly better without him under Don Granato. And, frankly, if you look at Granato's coaching resume, doesn't he seem like the guy that, you know, would be getting a head coaching job, not the guy that's been coaching, like, Team Europe and Team Swiss and Team half season Edmonton Oilers.
Absolutely. No, you're totally managing right.
Like being or whatever, the president of Southampton. So Granato, I think this is probably going to be something that a lot of people think, is doing a significantly better job than Kruger was. And I don't even think it's just the, we got a new coach bump that happens all the time in hockey for various reasons. I think it's a few things. Mm-hmm. Like, and not the least of which is handling Dahlin different, shuffling lines in a way that makes a little bit more sense. Maybe the tougher practice is paying off. I don't know. What do you think of this Granato character?
I mean, I think it's night and day for one. I was reading today, today being Wednesday at the time that we're recording this, quote that I wanted to share of him talking about Rasmus Dahlin and essentially just confirming what we all already knew. But Granato was quoted as saying today, "I've spoken with Rasmus Dahlin quite a bit in the last week with that as a focus, that being guys like playing with the puck and pretty much just like playing with joy and not being miserable all the time. I've spoken with Rasmus quite a bit in the last week with that as a focus, giving him the green light, for lack of a better way to say it, to go. He's been great. And tonight was evidence of that." So that definitely confirms, you know, that Kruger, again, for lack of a better way of putting it, wasn't giving Dahlin the green light. He wasn't allowing him to play the style of play that has made him, you know, made him at the time a generational talent, you know, with his draft positioning. And I just think that you can't overstate just how crucial it was that they canned Kruger and that they fired him for the sake of Dahlin's development, because he is the single most important piece, I would say, right now in the organization in terms of how he ends up panning out, because you already know what Jack is. You pretty much know what Sam is. Cousins, I know, you know, he's going to play a big part in that. But when it comes to Dahlin and the idea of having this franchise number one, true number one defenseman, it's invaluable. And not many teams can say that they have somebody like that, especially to the caliber of which that Dahlin has been projected to eventually end up as. So he looks like a completely different player. I mean, it goes into, I think, the green light thing. You know, when we say that, right on the surface level, we think, oh, okay, so just giving him like the chance to like skate with the puck. But I think that just, that kind of leads to a domino effect. You know, if you're giving him the trust and the confidence to skate up the ice through the neutral zone and into the attacking zone with the puck, bring it over the blue line, I mean, that's going to lead to his confidence in other ways for him to try and be creative. And that's how two of the goals against the Devils were generated. The first, of course, being the amazing goal that he had scored where he did like the, he was like boxing a guy out on the side and he kind of dragged it in and just put it opposite corner. And it was gorgeous vintage Dahlin that I would say we probably haven't seen maybe since his rookie year, honestly. Yeah. And then secondly, too, like the middle stack goal was incredible with him, where he's just able to collect himself, gather a loose puck that was bouncing and up in the air, makes an incredible move, utilizes that skating, and then he just perfectly finds Casey in the slot. I mean, this is seeing, I know in general lately Dahlin has been playing better, like since Kruger was fired, but man, this was, I would say, his game against the Devils was the best that we have seen him, I could probably comfortably say, since Phil Housley was fired. Would you agree? Maybe no. There's something I'm forgetting last season, but like he just, yeah, in every facet, I just thought that he looked, not only like, it wasn't like he was like making sound play, he just looked smooth and it looked like he was like comfortable and that he was engaged in all the right ways. And I don't say that in like a corny way, but like he seemed like he was more into it at this game than at any point throughout the entire season.
Yeah. So basically the one thing though that I think we kind of forget, it's kind of a weird thing, and points aren't everything. You know, he had 40 points in 59 games last year.
No, I do. Yeah. I remember
like,
that. Yeah.
It's kind of, it's it, like, at least he was way more engaged on offense and useful on offense. Even when like the beginning of last year, especially, he was kind of a mess on defense, but you could tell by the end of the year, he had figured things out a little bit more. And then obviously this year, that, what can you say about this right year? It hasn't been great. But I do agree that he's looked significantly better. And that was by far his best game in forever, in over a calendar year. That, in the specific play you're mentioning, the middle stack goal, that play, that little bouncing puck that he's kind of mishandling a little bit at the blue line, has happened 1,000 times this year. Literally, it just happens all the time. And he has given, I feel like they've had like 5 occasions. Sometimes it's on the power play. Sometimes it's just regular strength. A lot of times it feels like it's a key moment of the game where a forward just takes that away from him. He gets embarrassed, even trying to chase the guy down. And that ends up being a goal.
Ends up smashing his stick by the end.
Yeah, and then he smashes his stick on the boards.
Yeah.
And like to see that he handled that so well in so many different ways, because he beat two guys on that play.
Yeah.
And used a little bit of muscle and made a smart offensive play. He didn't like just take a dumb shot at the chest. Like that shot was. Yeah. Well, and that shot was pretty much designed for Casey to tip it. And that's another guy that's been way more impressive. And I'll say, even though we've complained about Dellion a ton this year and a little bit last year too, we I don't think ever obviously didn't give up on him. It's just like a, come on, we need to get to, you need to start being a better player. Whereas I personally gave up completely on Casey Mittelstadt. And now I think he's an NHL player, even if he's not like a top 10 pick. At this point, what are you going to do? You spent the pick on him.
Right.
You just got to make him as good of a player as you can. And I think this has been a huge few weeks for him.
I agree. And I think with Casey too, looking ahead to next season, you know, you got to be sure to not make the same mistakes that you made before. I mean, the way that I see his role on the team, I know when you're, you know, investing in eighth overall pick in a guy, you're expecting him to be a top six guy. But I mean, if Casey ends up being the third line left winger next season, I am fine with that. If you have a foundation next season that your third line is going to be like Casey, Cousins, assuming that Sam stays at center, and then X, whoever you want to have for like that third guy. I mean, I feel way better about that. And it's funny because at the start of this season, I was right with you where I think I held on a little bit longer than you did in the Casey might pan out to be something. But then I eventually got to a point where pretty much everybody, there was almost nobody, at least that I could think of, that was would have anticipated Casey ending up, you know, playing the way that he has been. And again, I mean, I know I probably said this in a couple episodes, but like the biggest difference with him and the reason why he is so much more successful is just how drastically his skating has improved. And it was the case again against the Devils. I mean, I'm not even just saying from like a speed perspective, but also just from like a stamina and like keeping in the pace of the play. Like it just always seemed like he'd be 30 seconds into a shift last season. And like, he looked like he was about to die with like the look on his face, where he was just like slugging around and like breathing very, very heavily and just did not seem like he was in very good shape. Whereas this year he's winning puck battles. He's being able to more effectively utilize his incredible stick handling ability because he has the speed to be able to get around guys and make a move. Whereas last year, yeah, he had good hands, but when you don't have the speed to accompany that, again, with a guy who, you know, maybe doesn't have like the best hockey smarts compared to like somebody like a Sam Reinhart, for example, you know, you need to have every tool you can get to be able to, you know, be effective. And so I can't, you know, I notice it every single game with him that his skating is just so much better than it has been at any point in his career to date.
Yeah. I mean, part of that, yeah, like you mentioned, is him actually being in shape. And like, you could say maybe, I'm sure some people would read laziness into that, but as we laid out before, he has this very strange trajectory for a modern top 10 pick, the way he was playing high school so late in his career in USHL. Like those aren't the developmental leagues that the OHL.
He was 2 years out of high school when he came into the league.
Yeah, he only played 1 year of college.
Right.
He wasn't like blowing the doors off of things, you know, production wise. So yeah, like obviously they shouldn't have picked him in the top 10, but what are you going to do now and this year? But like, obviously he is an NHL player at this point, and you need to get whatever the best version of that is out of him. And if that means he's playing in the bottom six and he's like a bottom six scoring option, then that's what you need to get out of him.
Right.
I mean, it's not like Kevin Adams or whoever the coach ends up being, even if it's Don Granato, like can go back and change that at this point. You know, Curtis Lazar was thought to be a much higher end prospect, and it seemed like he washed out. And then, you know, look at him now. He's in the NHL. He's playing a solid role. Like, he's not a star in any way, but he belongs on the ice, which is more than you can say for a few guys this year. And like this isn't like a totally unheard of thing. A guy that was a really high pick just ended up being a solid contributor. And like, it would be huge if they could get something like that out of Tage.
Massive.
For example, I don't have much faith in that.
No.
But yeah, I think Mittelstadt, like one of the reasons the Sabres have lacked scoring for insert how many years it's been, like 10, 11, is because you're playing the third and fourth line 25 minutes a game or something like that. Maybe a little bit less. Factor in penalty kill there, and you don't score in the penalty kill traditionally, unless you're Miroslav Chatan, apparently. what you get out of that time, if you have a good bottom six, is the other team not scoring. sure, that's what we got last year out of Larson and Gergensen and Oposo, even though they scored a little bit for their, you know, time they had on ice. But most of the time, we've tried to focus on having guys that prevented the other team from scoring, you know, in one way or another, whether that's a talentless face puncher by like John Scott, or a guy that was more like a penalty draw, like agitator type, like Pacoletta, or a Matt Ellis type, or Gergensen's type, or all these other types of guys.
Or guys who are at the end of the line of their career or have peaked a long time ago.
The David Legwand types.
Yeah, right. Legwand. I mean, hell, you could even say that with Niedermeyer too. You can even say that to an extent about Eakin as well. But my point was going to be, though, these guys that, because they're bad at offense, so they, for whatever reason, thinks that means like, all right, well, they must be good at defense. Then it's like, no, they're not good at anything.
Yeah, there are. Well, there are guys that are good at defense that play in the bottom six.
Well, like, yeah, of course. I'm saying specifically, though, like Eakin is the kind of player that I'm thinking of when I say that.
Yeah, a guy like Mittelstadt could have decent finishing talent for the bottom six. A guy like Larson, who was great at so many things, mm-hmm. he couldn't finish at all. Gergensen's is okay at a lot of things. He cannot finish either.
No.
Then you look at other guys like Matt Ellis was okay at things. I mean, he's fine for the tank team. Obviously couldn't finish or start. But yeah, Case, that's why Casey would look pretty interesting going forward. Like I saw someone mention, like, what if he was your fourth line center? What if you ran Eichel, Reinhardt, Cousins, and Mittelstadt down the lineup next year? Then you just got to find eight wingers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Or like six.
Something like that.
Because yeah. I guess you're stuck with Jeff Skinner next year.
That's, well, you know, and who knows? I mean, maybe next year. I know we kind of said that about this year, but I just think that the team was cursed. And you also had a coach that hated him for the, you know, pretty much entire tenure that he was here. So
yeah.
I got to think that, I would hope at least that there's somewhat of a correction to Jeff Skinner's misfortunes next season. I mean, at least I hope so, because that $9 million a year is going to just keep looking worse and worse, but we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah. That's actually brings up another point too, that like, just at least with Skinner, we don't have to get into this, but like I've seen people say, you know, like, look at Oposo. Like, Oposo was able to find a role, like, and he's getting paid over $6 million. And it's like, I'm sorry, but, like, they're two completely different types of players, and you need to go out of your way to do what you need to do to get that guy going and get him at least, like, I'm sure his finishing ability is probably diminished, but he at least needs to be 20 to 25 goals. He has to, and you need to make it happen. You can't just say, oh, well, he helps, you know, our fourth line stay afloat and not get caved in. To me, it's like, no, you need to go out of your way to, like, get the full value out of that contract. And people could say it doesn't matter, but like, to me, it does.
Yes. Also, Oposo isn't a good deal right now.
No,
it's not a good.
No,
I don't know if it's a great example.
Well, even him, I mean, we could even talk about that a little bit. He actually has been playing a bit better the past, pretty much since Kruger. I keep wanting to say the past week. It's literally since Kruger was fired. He's looked better.
He has. And I think his point streak ended, didn't it? Or did he get assist last night? I think it ended.
It may have. I can't.
Well,
yeah.
You know what's a fun thing with Tuesday night's game?
What's that?
They had three different defensemen score, which mm-hmm. I don't know the last time the Sabres had that. And they had all three Rasmi score.
And a Rasmi hat trick. A Rasmus hat trick.
Yeah, or whatever.
A Raz trick.
So do we... Hate that. We should talk about Asplund too a little bit. He's another guy that's a little bit better. So Asplund's been an interesting one. He doesn't really fall into the Mittelstadt thing we were talking about earlier, just because I think a lot of Sabres fans just didn't have too much of an opinion on him. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think he warranted one for a while. He's people have had their eyes on him for a while because he was a second round pick. They moved up in the second round to get him. They traded Mark Pezek in that trade. So
And took him over like DeBrincat and a couple of other pretty nice players as well.
Mostly DeBrincat. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, that
was it's biased against these short Kings.
I'm sorry. I know.
That's ridiculous. But he's a guy that he came over a couple years ago. He was playing in Rochester and a guy that's not really producing in the AHL, and you hear about defense and it's like, great, we have a million of those guys.
Yeah.
And then he gets here last year and it's like, wow, he really is all defense. This guy has no offensive ability. And he makes the lineup. We talked about this in our preview show with Anthony, actually, mm-hmm. from Expected Buffalo, that why is Asplund getting this chance and not R2? It's a line in. And all three of us kind of agreed, like, yeah, I'm good on Rasmus Asplund. Like, he can come up as a quad A type guy. Someone's injured, he comes up. If not, he can belong in the A. He's looked really solid these past couple weeks as, like, an offensive guy. And, like, another guy that's definitely a bottom six guy and a guy you shouldn't get too excited about. But it's like, if he can be a guy that is really solid bottom six, still continues to be good in his own zone and can pop in like 10 goals, 15 assists. Another guy that's decent to have around.
Absolutely.
A guy that can, let's say, out of building our lineup next year, play on Casey Mittelstadt's wing.
Well, no, I would need
five more wingers.
I would even say, what are your thoughts on like a fourth line next season of something like Asplund, Lazar, and R2? For example, I mean, who knows? R2 might even be ready. Yeah, I mean, isn't he playing center right now? Or is Sheen playing center on that line?
He can play center.
Yeah, he can. Or even if R2 can. But like those three potentially as like a bottom line.
No, it's worth a shot.
It's not bad. I mean, it's better than what you have. It would be cheap, which you need. And I would also say too, it kind of, you know, But it kind of gets you to that point. I know Lazar isn't exactly like an offensive dynamo or anything like that. But, you know, there's no reason that you should try and construct like your fourth line differently than you would construct your second or third line, in my opinion. Like you should have the ability to score at least on all lines. And I think that too many like old school coaches get bogged down with having to have like a true checking line or something like that. But to me, it's like, I don't really need that. If I have guys who are at least responsible in their own zone and can contribute, like contribute offensively a little bit, then I'm fine with that. I don't think we need to do this whole like, I mean, Cody Eakin, again, I keep going back to, but it's worth going back to because they gave him a multiple year deal to be this, like, I don't know if it was to replace Johan Larsson or if they thought that he was going to be able to recreate, you know, his career season with Vegas, but like, that's exactly the kind of guy that you don't want to go for. And it looks even worse when, again, you compare his $2+ million that he's getting this year and next year to the sub $1 million contracts that Toby Reeder and Riley Sheehan both have, who are significantly better players than him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I feel like if you go into next season with that kind of approach where, I mean, I don't even know if it's Lazar, but if your fourth line consists of R2 and Asplund and then another guy, I mean, I don't know if CJ Smith will ever break through. I doubt it at this point, if it hasn't happened yet. But if it's Toby Reeder, like anything like that, like I'm fine with that. They have to find a way to get rid of Eakin. But I just think that, you know, you got to start to utilize these guys who you've had sitting in Rochester, you know, and now especially, at least it seems like from what we've heard in recent days from Granato and I believe Kevin Adams, that they're going to actually try and get some of these Rochester guys extended looks. And it's like, okay, if you're going to do this, then you have to make sure that like, if they stick and they look good, you're not going to just sign pointless players and bury guys like how you did this season. Because in reality, again, like Ruustalainen probably did not need the time in Rochester. I pretty firmly believe that. I mean, he's played 13 games and, you know, what adjustments are you expecting him to make in that little of time before you're giving him a potential shot in the NHL that he wouldn't have already been accustomed to or known from playing, you know, in Finland? I mean, granted, yeah, it's like the ice size and getting acclimated to just like the day-to-day, but I would have just rather had him up from the start and you see what you have in him. I mean, the guy's 23 years old. What are you waiting for, you know?
Yeah, he's not a young guy. It's the same issue they had with Pilot in the past.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Another guy that should still be here. I mean, can you imagine if the team had Pilot instead of Irwin, they'd still suck, but like what kind of upgrade is that? That's a huge upgrade.
It'd be
a lot nicer. Yeah. We've said it a million times. We need to see him. We need to see R2 get like at least a 10 game look at some point this year.
Also, what are you doing? I mean, Grant, I know it worked out and they won, but what are they doing the seven defenseman thing and dressing Irwin instead of him against the Devils?
So it mentioned as a salary cap type thing. Is this with the number of contracts they've had on the team? Because at some point they might need to have another guy up at some point.
Yeah, but I thought that with the way the setup with the taxi squad that alleviated that.
I thought so too.
Huh.
And so I don't understand. I saw someone mention it was a salary cap thing, but does that also mean like, I should probably look this up. But anyway, if Taylor Hall's gone, would that make it better? Because now he's off the cap and they're not pushing up against it anymore?
I would assume,
depends how much money they retain.
Well, and either way, I mean, that's going to be, even if they do the max, that's what, $4 million that's going to open up, you know? So,
yeah. So we want to do a little Hall talk because he might be gone by the time we talk again.
Very well.
Trade deadline's Monday. We'll be talking Sunday, so we'll see. So he was a topic of conversation on Twitter. Hockey Twitter in general, not just Sabres Twitter. Ken Campbell, who's an idiot, he's a really dumb guy, works for the Hockey News, had a tweet today that he was basically like, not interested in Taylor Hall in trade deadline.
He said there were 15 guys
he'd rather have. Now, if I could really actually ask him, is like, because the money and what you'd have to give up, plus him maybe being disappointing or it's like a playoff experience, I don't know, but there's no way there's 15 guys. Mm-mm. Like, to me, if you're trading for Hall right now, you might not have to give up that much. Mm-mm. Like, second round picks in the NHL, they're nothing. I know other franchises I've heard of occasionally you can draft good players in the second round.
What?
But even if you look at like second rounds throughout the NHL drafts, they're not that good. So if it's going to be a first, I get it. But like, if you're going for the cup, that might be like the 30th, 31st pick, 29th, 28th. Don't worry about it too much. Seriously.
Just give it to us.
Yeah.
Just hand it over.
I mean, the Blues did that but that was, you know, for like 7 years of Ryan O'Reilly, not like 20 something games of Taylor Hall. So Hall, but basically that's an idiotic take. It's a really dumb take. Whatever.
The worst of the
takes. What annoys me a little bit about this is that quote unquote smart hockey Twitter, really analytics Twitter, always feels the need to respond to these stupid, stupid takes of like the old dinosaur type journalists. And you don't need to respond to every dumb take, but I think they actually went a little far in defending Taylor Hall because he actually is a huge disappointment this year and he actually is on the decline. And I would be concerned if I was a fan of a team that was considering giving him a 5 or 6 year deal next summer. Because think about this real quick, right? Taylor Hall, a few years ago, 3 seasons, everyone says 2 seasons on Twitter. I don't know why that is. It was 3 seasons ago. He was the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
39 goals. He had like 94 points or something like that. He led the Devils to the playoffs, the only time they've been in the past 9 years. Great season. Since then, he has not been able to score. The following season, he had 11 goals in 33 games. Obviously, he ended up getting hurt. Last season, between two teams, the Devils and the Coyotes, he had 16 goals across more than 60 games. Mm-hmm. And this year he has 2 goals in 37 games. So like the whole like sarcastic, like, oh, is he suddenly always going to shoot 2.3% forever? No, of course not. But if we're being generous and giving him a 10 shooting percentage this year, he would only have 8 or 9 goals. I've said that on Twitter multiple times already. That's not good. He's not taking a lot of shots and his shooting percentage is dipping as it is. It was just above 10, I think, his first 3 or 4 years in Edmonton. And it dipped after that. And it went up for 1 year. By far the highest is obviously his MVP year. It was 14.9%. And since then, it's like way lower than 10. And this is kind of a long trend. Like outside of that MVP season, it's like a 6 or 7 year trend.
Right, right. So, and the thing too, I would just say like the quality of his chances. I mean, it's not like, you know, he has a shooting percentage of 2 and he's taking shots from like the blue line or like the half wall. Like,
yeah,
the guy's getting breakaways. He's getting odd man rushes. Like he has, there's no reason other than pretty much him just not being able to finish on NHL goalies this year, you know, that he should not be doing this. But I do want to just interrupt you quickly because a team who was a potential suitor for Taylor Hall is now out of the sweepstakes because Kyle Palmieri has just been traded to the New York Islanders with Travis Zajac in exchange for Greer Jobst, the Islanders' first-round pick in the 2021 NHL draft and a conditional fourth-round pick in the 2022 NHL draft. And that was about 10 minutes ago that just broke. And with that being said, Darren Dreger then just tweeted, big trade between the Islanders and Devils with Palmieri and Zajac. The main piece is going to the Isles. Teams will now shift to Hall and the Sabres. So pretty much the Sabres are up to bat now.
Okay, well, that means this will actually be worthwhile listening to on Thursday because there's mm-hmm. a good chance the trade happens tomorrow. So another thing I was going to say is this guy, I believe his name is JR Fresh on Twitter. He has a lot of followers, like did a compilation of goals Taylor Hall didn't score this year and mm-hmm. labeling is like, look at how unlucky he's been. And like, I'm sorry, I watched the video. It like some of the things are bad luck. Like he should have more goals, obviously, but that's a lot of poor finishing.
That's what I'm saying.
That video and I don't want to get to a larger point about hockey Twitter. Like the people are like, oh, watch the game. But like, you know, seriously though, sometimes look at what you're paying it. Pay attention to what you're watching sometimes a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Not everyone, but some of you. Seriously. Like he's not going to shoot 2.3%, but he's probably not going to shoot like 11 or 12 like some star players do. He might not even shoot 10. He hasn't done that in a while. Like I think Kevin at Nrider, Knight Rider, mm-hmm. who we've mentioned every episode, said it really well on Twitter. Like, his hands don't move like they used to, and they don't move as fast as they should. So like goalies stop most of these now, and that, which is, we've talked about before, goalies are really good, mm-hmm. but like you need to have really fast and good hands if you want to score a lot. Now, I don't want to go into a whole Taylor Hall bashing thing. He, for
you love season, going on Taylor Hall.
No, I'm not, because I'm going to say something nice now. Okay. He is a really good passer. So when people ask like, oh, Hall isn't just as much of a slump as Skinner, why doesn't he get sat? The answer is, well, first of all, the coach didn't hate Taylor Hall. Mm. But the other answer is that he's a really good passer and is better in his own zone than Skinner. But his passing is still good and he still can kind of drive play. And he's fine in his own zone. I haven't been overly impressed the way I was with Eichel and Reinhardt this year and have been with other guys in years past. But he's fine in his own zone. He's not a liability there. So it's like, that's what you get out of it. So mm-hmm. What I'm saying is Taylor Hall's a former first overall pick and a former MVP, but he is not that right now. He's only 29, but he's, if you're looking at this summer, I would not be paying him like 5x40, for example. Absolutely not. I'd be looking for seven or less.
8 million a year?
Well, I mean, like a former MVP who's still in his 20s.
I would be shocked if he gets paid more than 6 a year. I really, really think.
How much does he make this year?
He made 8.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's going to take a cut, and it's going to be pretty significant.
You shouldn't have bet on yourself, man.
Super should not have. So, I mean, that brings up a really interesting, you know, potential events that could unfold, because now, again, like, you take the Islanders out of the equation. Maybe now this will mean that, you know, teams will get a little bit desperate because Palmieri is, again, he was one of the marquee forwards who was out there. Maybe, you know, somebody's going to get a little desperate now, and then a bidding war can start and you can try and drive the price up a little bit. And by drive the price, I mean, like you were saying before, if you could get like a late first round pick, I will be thrilled. If you could get like a B prospect for him from somebody, that's awesome. You know, and I'm sure you're going to probably have to include, you know, more on the deal to be able to get that. But
I can throw in a lightly used Cody Eakin.
Ooh, that sounds great. For only $2 million, you can have the worst player in the NHL since Vladimir Sobotka. I don't know. I think that I'm hoping that we will be pleasantly surprised by the return for him. I don't think that they're going to hit a home run or anything like that, but I really want to think that they're going to be able to get something.
He's still pretty good, you know. Look, I would also say this season for Taylor Hall would look completely different if, not even if his shooting percentage was normal or whatever, but if Eichel was healthy. Mm-hmm. Because, like, yeah, sure, if that great passing is going to set up Eichel, and because Eichel's there, Victor Olsen remembers how to play hockey, then, yeah, sure, Hall would have a ton of assists and maybe a few more goals, and things would look a little bit better. It'd be like, that's not the signing they thought it was going to be, and they wouldn't be looking to fight for the playoffs or anything like that. We'd be trading him right now. The return would be better, but people wouldn't be going like, what the hell happened to him? 2 goals in 37 games. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And only what, 18 assists to show for it too? 17, 18?
17 assists.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all good. The other thing, I guess, with the playmaking and all that, which people who watch the Sabres know, is that fell off a good amount, not even just with Eichel getting hurt. Like, he just hasn't been as good the past month or so, period. He does not make as much of an impact. And I would say the same for Jeff Skinner, but I don't want to get into a whole thing about Jeff Skinner right now.
Smart.
Yeah. Smart. But yeah. So I don't know if we have anything else we want to talk about, but there is a quiz.
Yeah, why don't we do the quiz? I think that our Monday episode is going to be the moneymaker, because we're going to be right before the trade deadline. We'll be covering that pretty extensively. Maybe Taylor Hall will be traded by then. Brandon Montour, maybe. I mean, there's a lot of guys who should, emphasis on should be going out the door. So hopefully, you know, we'll have some more news to report by then, but we'll make sure that by Monday's episode, we'll have a nice meaty trade deadline preview set up and ready to go for you all to listen.
Yeah, you didn't hear from me, but some teams are very interested in adding a big, bulky defenseman.
Really? Yeah, Does he like snap the puck around the boards real well?
He does. Not like Zach Bogosian level good,
right?
But he has some snarl.
He a little bit of snarl. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So maybe, you know, let's say like, oh my God, you're up in Canada. You love these big tough guys, defensemen.
That's true.
Are you kidding me?
That's
true. So like, if you're the Oilers, like, you're going to the playoffs, you're going to make the playoffs. The playoffs are already set in the North Division. So like, yeah, obviously you give up Ryan Nugent Hopkins to add some size and defense. Well, that's if the Jets don't beat you to it.
Yeah. Because
they actually do need help on defense. I don't know if Ristol will give it to them, but I mean, for the chance to have him, once you just give up Mark Scheifele?
Yeah.
Mark Scheifele?
Scheifele.
Scheifele.
There you go.
There we go.
Why not? I think that's probably fair, you know? Yeah. I got to be honest. I think if you're going to trade Ristolainen into Winnipeg, you're probably going to need like Scheifele and Kyle Connor too.
That's true.
Yeah, that would probably be more of a fair return for a player of Ristolainen's caliber or whatever you want to call it. All right. Well, yeah, why don't we jump into the quiz then?
All right. So I don't know if you've heard, but the Sabres are doing pretty well at the Sam Reinhart fellow playing center.
Mm.
He's doing pretty well too.
I have.
In both zones. Really proud of the little guy. Reinhart was a second overall pick. And I think some Sabres fans are disappointed by what he turned out to be. Although maybe they shouldn't be. Maybe they'd rather have Leon Draisaitl. You know, things don't always work out the way you want them to. At least we don't have Sam Bennett. Not every second overall pick becomes a star. It's not nearly as good of a pick as the first overall pick. Strange thing. Mm-hmm. But most second overall picks are stars or at least very good players. And more so than that, they tend to stick around.
Mm.
In fact, there are 18 active second overall picks right
now. Wow. 18 active, huh?
Yep. So okay. I believe it. And so like, well, to put a caveat in there, this does not include Quinton Byfield. So there's really 19 active.
Okay.
We're not counting him yet. And it'd be every draft between 2001 and 2019, except I'm just going to give this one to you. Carey Lehtinen is not active anymore.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Love me some
Carey Not that Lehtinen. He would have fit into this quiz anyway. This quiz is, I'm going to ask you to rank them by points per game.
Whoa. So you're going to tell me who they are?
Yes.
And then I have to rank them in the order that I think?
Yes.
Okay.
So I do need
this
a pen.
This is an interesting one. Yeah. Let me grab one for you there, pal. One moment. If you want to.
Yeah, no problem. So it's interesting because what we're going to be asking Brendan to do here is kind of do some math in his head real quick. Points per game is interesting.
Yeah. I went to school and for communication. So math isn't exactly my forte, but we'll give it a go.
No, Matt is my forte.
Wow. Nice.
Wow.
That's great.
That one's for our friend, Evan Drebot. So this probably goes without saying, but if you stick around forever, eventually you're not putting up the same number of points. Your points per game drops. If you are right now in the prime of your career, your points per game is probably really good. If you're young, it's probably not good yet. And if you're looking at guys that have been, let's say, had their prime in these past couple of seasons where scoring is up, that'll help. What about guys that had their prime when scoring was up last time after the first lockout? Who knows? This is a lot of math to do in your head. But
pull up a list of second overall picks? I know you're going to tell me them, but is that breaking the rules at all if I just look up the names so I can
have just them in the front names? Of me? Yeah, that's fine. As long as they don't have any.
Of course not. Yeah. All right.
But like just to give the listener some idea of this, like I think the oldest one on here is Jason Spezza. You have like obviously this another interesting wrinkle, defensemen are on here. Drew Doughty was second overall. Victor Hedman was second overall. You have some young guys, Line A, Reinhart, Eichel, some really young guys, Kaapo Kakko, Nolan Patrick, another defenseman, Ryan Murray. You have guys like JVR that were really overshadowed by the first pick that year, Patrick Kane. You have another young guy, like I mentioned, Svechnikov. I think I was wrong here. The oldest guy is Patrick Marleau.
Patrick Marleau.
You know what? Off the top of my head here, there's got to be another second overall pick that's not represented because that throws my math off. But I don't know who it would be, so don't worry too much about it.
I'll do my best. Okay. All right. I have a list, but it's not all the way caught up, but it's fine.
You know who they are.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I just wanted to like have the visual of seeing the guys, but all right. Well, I feel pretty good about this. I think I know a pretty good amount of them. And I think, you know, using kind of some of the context clues you were giving me there about, you know, guys at the end of their career versus the younger fellas might help me out a little bit, but yeah. All right, man. Do you want to go through the list of them then? Just so we can share that with the listeners.
Yeah. Do you want to do it like in order then?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, well, I'm going to have to jump around and do it in order, but like Marleau is what, 97?
Correct.
So Let's see. Okay. Actually, you have the list.
I'm yeah.
Great. Let's have you do it.
So we have Patrick Marleau in 1997. Then Jason Spezza, 2001. Eric Stahl, 2003. Evgeny Malkin, 04. 05 is Bobby Ryan. 06, Jordan Stahl. 07, JVR. 2008, Drew Doughty. 2009, Victor Hedman. 2010, Tyler Seguin. 11 is Gabe Landeskog. 12 is Ryan Murray. 13 is Barkov. 14 is Reinhart. 15 is Eichel. 16 is Patrick Laine. 17 is, who the heck is 17, Taylor?
Is it Nolan Patrick?
17 is Nolan Patrick. Yes, correct. Okay. And then we have 18 would be, that's the down lane. So that's Svechnikov. Okay. Okay.
And right, then we're good. And then 19 would be Kaapo Kakko.
Correct.
And 20 would be Byfield. So I realized the mistake I made is I was missing a person. I somehow didn't see him on the list. But hold on, I'm gonna fit them in right
now. Not a problem. All right. I got to just, why?
So all right, so I'm slotting in a new person here.
Cool.
The person I forgot, it's not that important, but I forgot Sagan for some reason. Not see him on the list I was looking at. So basically it'll be Marlowe.
Wait, did we say Malkin?
Yeah, Malkin's.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I thought, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So basically Marlowe is 97, Spezza's 01, and then you have like 03 through 19.
Right.
After that.
Okay.
So like I said, they stick around for the most part.
All right.
All right. So now I'm going to, so how do you want to do this?
I'll just start and just go through the kind of list of the order that I think that guys would probably be in from top to bottom. Cause I think it'll be easiest if I go for the better players first.
Okay. All so, right. But how do we want to mark it? Like, as far as, do you want to just go through all 17? Or do you want me to say yes or no as we go?
Just say yes or no as we go, probably. Or no, maybe I should talk through who I think the order is, and then you can tell me after that. All right. So, oh man, I'm going to put Malkin at one. Okay. I think that he's got to be at, or maybe a little bit over a point per game. Let me see this list real quick. Who the hell would I want to put two? Because part of me is thinking this has either got to be Barkov or Jack. And I think from a points per game perspective, Eichel is probably number two.
Oh, okay.
Then I'll put Barkov at three because he's got to be up there as well.
And people call him the most underrated player in the league.
Barkov, yes.
Every year.
Yeah, amazing. All right, where's our list here? Let's see. Then I'm going to go with... How about Eric Stahl? I'm going to put him at four.
There are two Stahls on this list, obviously.
Yes. I think the other one is probably a bit further down. You know what? He was putting up pretty big numbers, so I'm going to go Spezza five.
Okay.
I got to think that probably like Laine, Svechnikov, and Landeskog have got to be right there. Hedman can even be up here too. Let's go Laine next.
Okay.
And then, how many do I have?
You have six.
Six? Okay.
Like Bobby Ryan, JVR, Sagan.
Can I go Landeskog next, actually?
Yeah.
And then... Jesus, Marlowe's got to be in here somewhere too. And Svechnikov. I'll just do those two next, I guess.
So what are they?
Marlowe and Svechnikov.
Oh, okay.
How about we go... Let's do JVR. next.
Okay.
And then I think I want to go defenseman and go Victor Hedman.
Okay.
Then I see these names.
So the guys you haven't said Sagan yet. Kako, Patrick, Murray, Drew Doughty, Jordan Staal, Reinhart, Bobby Ryan.
Oh Jesus, I forgot about that. What are my last two that I said? Was it Hedman and then who was before that?
JVR.
Hedman and then JVR. Okay. Can you put Reinhart between JVR and Hedman?
Yeah.
And then put...
So I have Hedman 12th then after Reinhart 11 and then...
Let's go with, See, now this is where it gets tough because Bobby Ryan and Jordan Staal both had like.
Yeah. You want to go over career. Who you have left?
Yeah.
You have Sagan, Jordan Staal, Bobby Ryan.
Oh my God. How did I miss Sagan on this?
Doughty, Murray, Kako, and Patrick.
Jesus. Ooh, all right. I forgot about Tyler Sagan existing. Can I put him? He's got to be way up, actually. Shit.
So we both forgot about Sagan on our list, didn't we?
Yeah, I guess so. Put Sagan. Who did I have after Barkov?
Eric Staal.
Put Sagan before Staal.
Okay. So hold on. I got to adjust the list then.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Can you read through my order again really quick?
No problem. One second. I don't know why I did that. Hold on. Okay, so you have 1 Malkin, 2 Eichel, 3 Barkov, 4 Sagan, 5 Staal, 6 Spezza, 7 Laine, 8 Landeskog, 9 Marleau, 10 Svechnikov, 11 JVR, 12 Reinhart, 13 Hedman.
All right, let's put... Jordan Staal, then Bobby Ryan.
Okay.
And then Drew Doughty, probably. And then who's left? Kako, Patrick, and Murray?
Yep.
They've got to all be like right next to each other. Maybe not as much. Actually, no, they probably all are like right next to each other. I'm going to go Murray last, since he's the defenseman, and I'm going to just assume he probably has less points than those two, even though he's been in the league way longer and he's been hurt, super injury plagued throughout his career. So I'm going to guess that he's probably last on this list, even though I think that he's a solid player. I'll go then Patrick and then Kako. So Kako second last, Patrick third last.
Okay.
Is that everybody?
Yeah. The top and bottom of your list are real solid.
Cool.
And it's good you had that pegged as the bottom three. Those three guys are all in the 0.3 points per game range.
Okay.
No one else was even in the 0.4s.
Wow.
So they're a real bottom three. Now, the top is also solid, and you did a good job with your late addition of Sagan. Because let me see here. You have – well, let's just read your list. You have – starting 1 to 18, Malkin, Eichel, Barkov, Sagan, Staal, Spezza, Laine, Landeskog, Marleau, Svechnikov, Van Riemsdyk, Reinhart, Hedman, Staal, Ryan, Doughty, Patrick, Kako, and Murray. Let's go one by one.
Okay.
Malkin first. You are correct.
Cool.
With 1.175 points per game.
That checks out.
Also right that he's over a point a game. A distant second, Jack Eichel.
Hey.
0.947 points per game.
There we go.
Third, with 8.75 points per game, it's Alexander Barkov.
Hell yeah.
So that's three, right? Fourth, with 0.847 points per game, is Tyler Sagan.
Let's go. All right. Good start. Fifth,
this is your first one wrong, but I will say you only just transposed these two guys. Fifth is Spezza with 0.828.
Are him and Staal flip-flopped?
Yes.
All right. Well, I was close still. I was right in the neighborhood.
Yeah. So Spezza, then Stahl's 0.811.
Okay.
But now seventh is Laine with 0.783. You were right.
There we go.
And eighth is Landeskog with 0.743.
Let's go.
And ninth is Marlowe at 0.679.
Oh, good shit. Wow.
And 10th is Svechnikov at 0.665. And 11th is JVR at 0.657.
Are you serious?
Yep. However,
head ahead at some point.
Well, you kind of overrated your good friend Sam here by a little bit. And you underrated Bobby Ryan, who's at 0.657.
Wow.
And right after Bobby Ryan is Reinhardt at 0.64.
Oh, so I was only off by one spot on Reinhardt?
Yeah.
Okay. So then that would, Hedman would have to be next, right?
Well, let me see here real quick. Let's see.
Isn't that who I said after Reinhardt?
Maybe? You said JVR was right, and then you had Ryan at 12. Yeah. And then 13 is Reinhardt, and that's where you had Hedman. But Hedman was 14th at 0.635.
So I had the order of them correct. Okay, yeah.
You just Bobby Ryan jumped them both, and also Jordan Stahl.
Okay.
But let's see, 14th. Yeah, 14th is Hedman. Yeah, so that's basically it. You had those guys in the right order, except Bobby Ryan jumped all of them.
Good stuff. Wow. I'll take that. So how many?
So let me see here. So that's Ryan was 12th, Reinhardt's 13th, Hedman's 14th, Stahl is 15th, and then 16th is Drew Doughty. So you got that right.
Cool.
And then you got the bottom three right. Patrick is at, so Drew Doughty is 0.554, Jordan Stahl is 0.567. Everyone else is at least 0.63. And then the bottom three are Nolan Patrick at 0.374, Kaapo Kakko at 0.330, and Ryan Murray at 0.319.
All right. So how many did I get right?
Let's see here. Well, one, two.
Do I get bonus points for having orders right, even if I missed a play?
One, two, three, four, five, six. So yeah, 12 of the 18 right, but it's tough because when you get one wrong, usually you get two wrong.
Yeah.
And the big thing that screwed you up is Bobby Ryan jumped four of your guys.
Right. But the guys who he jumped were all in the right order, right?
Yeah. It was Reinhardt, Hedman, Stahl, and or was. Yeah, Reinhardt Evans Stahl. He jumped three guys, so you had all four of them wrong. But people forget Bobby Ryan was good.
He was with the Ducks. Oh, yeah.
He used to put up some points.
Absolutely.
What else was this?
Snubbed on the Olympic team.
So I'm going to say here, looking at these second overall picks, Sam Reinhardt, considering his defensive prowess, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's 13th. He's kind of just behind Bobby Ryan in points per game. And I would put him, frankly, he's Bobby Ryan and JVR are tied at 0.657, which is kind of crazy. I would take Reinhardt over either of them.
100, even in the in the primes for sure. JVR is also like notoriously ridiculously streaky.
Yeah,
I say that as somebody who's had him on my fantasy hockey team for I think the past 3 years.
So I would have out of these 18 guys, I would actually have Reinhardt 11th, or is it 19 guys? It's 19.
19.
Well,
that's not including Byfield though. It wasn't at 19 with Byfield.
No, it was 19. We forgot Sagan originally.
Gotcha.
That's okay. Right. Okay. So you actually were. But I see you had six wrong.
Mm.
So you're 13 of 19.
Hell yeah. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So, but looking at that though, I don't think Reinhardt breaks the top 10, I guess. I can't make that case just because, he's about in the middle then.
Mm-hmm.
Svechnikov is really on track to be better than him. Marlowe is, I think, the all-time leader in games played in NHL history.
Yeah. That's
pushing up against it. Landeskog is a little bit better. Line A, you know what? Line A, it's getting pretty close. Line A is not looking that good. His points per game is good because he scored so much his first 2 years, but I'd be a little bit worried if I were a Columbus fan or a fan of Line A in general.
Yep.
And then, obviously, Eric Stahl is better. Spezza, yeah. Sagan, who's trended down, was such a good scorer in his prime that what are you going to do? He's a bunch better. And then Barkov, Eichel, and Malkin.
Yeah, yeah.
Malkin's a Hall of Famer. Eichel could be, and Barkov maybe could be too.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah. And you know what? I guess you got to put Hedman and Doughty over him too. I need to think about that. Yeah. Hedman and Doughty over him too. He's 13th.
That's okay.
13th through 12th. We'll see what you can do, Patrick Laine. Your move, buddy. Mm-hmm. You got your trade. You're in one of the most beautiful cities in America, Columbus, Ohio.
Is that so?
Yeah. I heard because people were saying really concerned that he was, remember the Fortnite thing?
Oh, yeah.
He played hundreds of hours of Fortnite. People are like, he's addicted to video games, not focusing on hockey enough. But since he's moved to Ohio, he's really turned his life around. He's wearing Monster Energy t-shirts.
Him and his good friend, John Tortorella.
He's got stud earrings. He's telling everyone about how the cold moon or whatever, and how Joe Rogan actually interviewed this UFC fighter, but it's actually super sick. He's actually a super nice, laid back guy. he's really like embracing the culture in Ohio, and I hope his play on the ice starts to reflect that.
Love that.
Anyway, I'm done with this podcast.
Okay. Do you have a recommendation for the week?
Yes, actually, based on the conversation on Twitter today, I'm going to use a little different recommendation.
Okay.
Because our good friend had kind of stepped in some shit, Josh Allen. And I'd say I'd like to recommend you to all get vaccinated. Neither of us are medical experts here, me or Brendan, but I do listen to those medical experts.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it works. Almost 100% effective in all the vaccines, pretty much, in preventing hospitalizations and death if you do get the virus. Incredibly effective at preventing you from getting the virus. And also, seemingly, according to the CDC recently, incredibly effective at preventing the spread of the virus if you do get it, which means it seems like fully vaccinated people, if they do get it, if they get the virus, it's incredibly hard for them to actually get it. Very unlikely for you to get it. And the circumstances you do get it, you won't spread it. You won't really get sick. It's like you never got it. Get it.
Let's get back to the movies. That's my recommendation for the week as well. And I say that because I actually got my Johnson & Johnson vaccine today. And one thing to just add to the medical professional point. Yeah, there's a couple of points, actually. One, the thing that I always like to think of with this is if there were legitimate risks like that were troubling enough for somebody to not get it, do you think that the first people to have gotten it at large would have been like healthcare professionals, the people that we need to like keep us alive and who are like, you know what I mean? Like the healthcare workers who have essentially like pretty much have helped this country like stay afloat throughout the past year through this. And then the other side of it too, is that I think people have a lot of like a big misconception saying like, oh, well, this has only been around for a year. So how can we know the effects of the vaccine? But in reality, if you dig a little bit deeper into that, the coronavirus is a variant of SARS. And I'm pretty sure it was in like 2012 or something, or around that time, Obama had approved like funding for research into the SARS vaccine. And since this is just a variant of that, it wasn't like they were starting from the ground up.
Yes. I would like my recommendations in the future to come from actually watching the movie in the theaters, which I'm going to start doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'll go with you. We're both fully vaccinated now.
That's right.
Damn. Here we go.
It's been well over 2 weeks. So I'm inoculated as shit. So yeah, that's a podcast for the week, I guess.
Yeah.
Who's
your random Sabres player?
I hadn't thought about this one actually. Well, let's go with Eric Staal.
Wow. Love that. That's a great choice. Yeah. I'm gonna go with another Sabres King, David Legwand.
Oh,
we mentioned before.
I have no ill will towards him, unlike Eric Staal. Mm. Eric Staal, by the way, I was right over the summer when I was mad he got signed. It wasn't logical, but logic is stupid.
Mm.
Logic often leads you astray, and emotions will never let you down because you can always just feel whatever you want to feel. When I was mad when the Sabres traded for him, and I'm still mad because he sucked. They might as well just had Marcus Johansson out there.
Mm-hmm.
I will not listen to anyone telling me differently because I get to be mad about it and they weren't good anyway. So what's the point in disagreeing with me? And also I don't wish him well at all. And I don't wish the Montreal Canadiens well. See ya.
Okay. Wow. Well, I'm not going to argue with that. Well, everybody, thank you again for tuning into this episode of Straight Up Sabres, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics. Make sure you're checking out the Hockey Podcast Network on social media at HockeyPodNet. You're checking out all of our fellow shows, a part of the network for the other 30 teams in the NHL. Also, make sure you're checking out Buffalo Fanatics to keep up with all the latest Bills news and film study as we are approaching the NFL draft. Buffalo Fanatics is where it's at for getting all your Bills content. And make sure you're following us as well. You could find us on our personal Twitter accounts at Brendan1423 and Taylor's is Nigrelli93. And make sure you're following the show at Straight Sabres on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram. Find us at Straight Up Sabres. Thank you all again so much for tuning in. We will talk to you on Monday with our trade deadline preview. Have a great rest of your week, everybody.